Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, January 26th, 2023. Rooster County hires company to help with hot tax enforcement by Allegra Hobbs, A-L-L-E-G-R-A at BigBendSentinel.com. Rooster County. Rooster County commissioners on Tuesday voted to hire a software company to help tackle the ongoing problem of short-term rental owners evading tax payments. Austin-based company G-O-V-O-S will help the county collect hotel occupancy taxes, or HOT taxes, from delinquent operators by building a digital database of short-term rental properties that fall within Brewster County and outside Alpine City limits, according to Brewster County Judge Greg Hennington. Hopefully, from there, we can track that back to who's paying their taxes and who's not, said Hennington. It's a step towards addressing a long-standing issue for Brewster County, particularly Terlingua, where the presence of short-term rentals has ballooned and officials have struggled to collect the required taxes from all operators. The question of how to go about enforcement and overdue tax collection has been the subject of much discussion at past commissioners' courts. The GovOS platform will make it far easier for staffers to keep track of property owners in the county and correspond with them, said South County Commissioner Sarah Allen Colando. The interface is going to make it very easy and quick for our county staff to reach out to these hoteliers and Airbnb owners to click a button and send them a letter saying, "Hi, you need to register," said Colando. It should make their job so much easier. GovOS was one of two vendors that submitted proposals to the county. A selection committee recommended commissioners hire GovOS. With commissioners voting to move forward with the hire, the process of implementing the new tracking system can begin. County Treasurer Julie Morton estimated that process could take 3 to 4 months. Texas state law requires that HOT taxes, which are collected and enforced at the county level, be used specifically to promote tourism, but officials have been pushing to expand the scope of the taxes. A bill filed recently in the Texas House would allow cities to use HOT taxes to fund infrastructure projects. The Texas Hotel Lodging Association has opposed efforts to expand the use of HOT taxes outside of tourism promotion. Long-needed hospice services arrive in Alpine, with goal to expand to entire region. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Alpine. When diagnosed last May with heart failure, Dr. Ernest Reesing wasn't ready to leave his home in Alpine for a faraway nursing home. He and his family have deep ties to Alpine. His daughter, Susan Carroll, lives nearby. He had spent decades as a professor of veterinary technology at Sol Ross and served as the fire chief at the Alpine Fire Department. His wife, Jo, had been a second-grade teacher at Alpine Elementary School. When she was diagnosed with dementia, Ernest became her caretaker, a role he struggled to fulfill as his own condition declined. Until very recently, Ernest would have had little choice but to uproot and leave his hometown. Now, Angels Care Hospice, a palliative care provider with offices in Midland, is offering end-of-life care for Brewster County residents who have been without access to crucial hospice services for over a decade. Ernest and Joe are now both tended to by Nurse Karen Ramirez, also an Alpine local, in the comfort of their home. "It's been a godsend," said Ernest. Ramirez visits Ernest twice a week, and the couple receives bi-monthly visits from a chaplain provided by Angels Care. Ramirez said, "It's important that locals like the Reesings are able to receive the care they need. For people who have served their community, they shouldn't have to leave their home, she said. For the couple's daughter, the guidance Angel's Care provides on legal matters has been a source of comfort. The social worker helps by making sure you have all of your legal paperwork, your will, and power of attorney. They went through all of it to help me understand, really putting my mind at ease with everything else going on, said Carol. The entire Tri-County area has lacked hospice care since previous provider Big Bend Hospice shuttered around 2010, citing financial difficulties. The region also lacks assisted living facilities. Without hospice, Big Bend residents in need of end-of-life care have relied solely on the support of their families, have been forced to leave their homes in order to receive care in cities like El Paso or Midland, or have passed away in the hospital. Alpine Mayor Catherine Eaves, in a statement to the Big Bend Sentinel, expressed relief and gratitude at the return of such an essential service. It is an incredible feeling to have hospice here once again. Now, we no longer have to leave our beloved city, many of us with family and friends here, to receive palliative or end-of-life care, said Eaves. This greatly improves the quality of life, not only for the patient, but also for friends and family. Hospice is generally referred to as medical and emotional end-of-life care for terminally ill patients who may be suffering from cancer, heart failure, Alzheimer's, or other diseases, but needs vary among patients, said Dr. Adrian Billings, Chief Medical Officer of Preventative Care Health Services. Hospice care can extend for weeks, months, or even years in some cases. When you think of hospice, you think of the days before death, but in reality, it can be anyone with a terminal disease that is in the process of passing away, said Billings, who estimates around 10 to 30 patients in the Big Bend region might be candidates for hospice at any given time. Billings, who began practicing medicine in the region in 2007 when previous provider Big Bend Hospice was still in operation, said terminally ill patients often preferred to pass away in a familiar setting at home. But since local hospice care has gone by the wayside, individuals were left with fewer options for how to spend their final days, and grieving family members were left with fewer resources. Patients had to make difficult decisions of, do I want to pass away in a hospital setting with comfort measures in place provided, not at my home, but in an artificial hospital setting in a foreign setting, said Billings. There were none of the wraparound hospice services like pastoral care and respite care for the family members that are so important. With new hospice provider Angel's Care, Billings said patients will have more options available to them, and physicians will be less strained without the necessity of as many home visits. That long-needed shift is indicative of a much larger problem facing the region, that of limited access to health care. Having hospice again is an example of the expansion of the many health care services that are needed in rural communities like the Big Bend, said Billings. Angel's Care, which has locations in four states and is managed by Angmar Medical Holdings, Incorporated, is branching out to Alpine from their Midland office that also serves nearby Reeves and Pecos counties. Angel's Care representative said they have been active in Brewster County since November, taking on a handful of patients, and are currently working to grow their staff. Tiffany Bird, an account executive with Angel's Care, acting as Brewster County's point person, and Lene Lopez, executive director, said they saw a need for hospice care services in Alpine through their work with Midland-based doctors who have patients traveling from Alpine for health care. There's a major need for it there in Alpine, said Bird. We're slowly building up our staff out there and providing hospice care. The company has been posting on social media to recruit new hires and said it is interested in hiring locals. Angels has already recruited two registered nurses, including Alpine resident Ramirez. In addition to local employees, Angels sends certified nursing assistants from Midland to Alpine 2 times a week, with the goal of expanding to 3 days a week. For now, Angels is focusing on getting established in Brewster County and is still seeking a part-time social worker and a chaplain to add to their new Alpine team. However, they would like to expand services to Presidio and Jeff Davis counties eventually, said Bird. Individuals 65 and older make up 37% of the population of Jeff Davis County, 23% of the population in Brewster County, and 21.4% of the population in Presidio County, according to U.S. Census data from 2021. While they are currently working as a satellite operation out of their Midland office, the possibility of creating an Alpine hospice office is being explored, she said. We decided to run with it and see how many patients we will generate out there in that area, said Bird. We are fixing to try to request to service Fort Davis and Presidio because I know some of those towns aren't very far from Alpine, even though they may be in another county, so we will eventually try to venture out into those counties too. Once we do that, I'm sure it'll just blow up even more. In the absence of local hospice care, some Big Bend residents take on the role of caretakers for their loved ones. Marfa residents Lionel Hernandez and Jimmy Maywald have been acting as full-time caregivers for Hernandez's 86-year-old uncle, Ruben Vasquez, a Marfa native since 2019, and said they hoped to see the expansion of hospice care services to Marfa. It's almost an inherent right for you to be able to die in a home in the city where you were born. It is probably a very common wish amongst those facing the end of life, said Hernandez. In addition to taking care of Vasquez, Hernandez and Maywald check in on an elderly friend in Fort Davis and see the need for hospice care and caregiver support in that area as well. Hernandez said those who wish to die in their homes should be able to do so with company and without pain. These situations are present in our community on a smaller scale, but they're still there, and we should address them because nobody should ever die alone, said Hernandez. Hernandez and Maywald, who expressed gratitude that their demanding roles as caregivers were at least shared by each other, said they are exploring the possibility of establishing a caregiver support group in the area. There comes a time when we really need to go out there and talk to somebody about something we're struggling with at home with our loved one, said Hernandez. The couple also sees the need for more social activities for local seniors in order to get them out of their homes and into the community. Hospice is generally for people facing the last 6 months of their lives, right? But even those months should be special, said Hernandez. In addition to providing financial assistance for medications and personal care supplies, hospice care seeks to provide emotional and spiritual support for families and patients while they are experiencing loss. Helping full-time in-home caregivers, which are often family members, by giving them a break to run to the store or take a nap, for example, are important aspects of hospice, said Bird. There's so much more to it than just nursing care and aid care. It's really a whole family taking care of a family, said Bird. Marvie Burton, a retired hospice nurse living in Alpine, who worked with Big Bend Hospice while it was still in operation, said the return of hospice services to the Big Bend was sorely needed. Now 81, she recalled how Big Bend Hospice, which operated with the help of both nurses and volunteers, struggled to recruit enough volunteers and failed to keep afloat financially. As with the area's emergency medical services, providing hospice care to such a vast, isolated region is complicated by the driving time it takes to get to patients. Burton said they worked to have a few trained volunteers in each town, but traveled great distances to reach patients. Sometimes we'd have three or four patients here in Alpine, and a couple in Fort Davis, and maybe one or two over in Marfa, said Burton. Out in rural areas, it's a whole different ball game. Bird said Angel's Care will provide mileage assistance to their employees for their travel time, and the company may consider hosting educational community classes on hospice care in the area to help fill gaps in service. The company has been contacted by Sul Ross State University and may have the opportunity to get involved with the nursing school, allowing the students to complete clinical hours with them, said Lopez. To date, the company's biggest challenge has been securing a reliable, durable medical equipment, DME, provider to ensure they have the hospice supplies they need in Alpine, said Bird. Oxygen, that's definitely something that's dire. We really haven't run into too many options with that. It has been more like your other medical equipment that can take a week or two to even get it out there to them, said Bird. Bird and Lopez said they are being clear with their patients about their current limitations and resources. They said they have been working with case managers at Big Bend Regional Medical Center to obtain referrals and have been contacted weekly by Alpine residents seeking hospice care. We've even had families that just heard through the grapevine that Alpine now has hospice. They've called us themselves to let us know what was going on with their loved one, said Lopez. Material challenges aside, there is an emotional element to hospice care that the specialty workers are uniquely equipped to handle, said Burton, and that is helping families and communities learn to confront death. Our society, for some reason, is afraid of dying people, said Burton. Not so much fear, but they don't know what to say. My answer to them was, well, what did you talk to them about before you knew they were a hospice patient? To contact Angels Care Hospice Services for a consultation, call the main office line at 432-208-5530 or reach Tiffany Bird at 254-631-7734. Marathon to Receive Ambulance EMT Training from Emergent Air by Allegra Hobbs, ALLEGRA at BigBendSentinel.com. Brewster County. Emergent Air, the emergency services provider that has been serving North Brewster County since last summer, plans to contribute an ambulance and EMT training to the Marathon Volunteer Fire Department, a development that would significantly quicken response time and bolster the level of care available to the remote community. The anticipated development was announced by Brewster County Judge Greg Hennington at Tuesday's Brewster County Commissioners Court meeting. Hennington, along with Commissioner Ruben Ortega, had been in talks with Emergent Air about the arrangement, which would allow first responders to serve marathon patients in an ambulance and then transport them towards Big Bend Regional Medical Center in Alpine, either carrying them the whole journey or rendezvousing with Alpine responders midway. I think it's great for Marathon and great for Brewster County, said Hennington. Walter Kirkendall, program manager for Emergent Air, told the Big Bend Sentinel that the company already has an ambulance ready to deploy to Marathon. But first, firefighters with the Marathon Volunteer Fire Department will have to be trained as emergency responders. Emergent Air has plans to sponsor that training, said Kirkendall. That includes paying for the necessary classes, books, and testing to receive the requisite license. Emergent Air would also provide medical equipment, including a cardiac monitor, so marathon responders could provide a higher level of care before initiating transport to the nearest hospital. It would get a higher level of service there quicker. Currently, their first responders aren't built for medical. They're a fire department, said Kirkendall. Hennington said the arrival of the new ambulance and accompanying training would be something all parties would work towards in the coming months. Kirkendall was unable to provide a precise timeline, but said he hoped the development would be a done deal in the first quarter of 2023. Marathon Fire Chief Brad Wilson said the change would be a godsend for the community, which currently depends on ambulance services from Alpine. "We generally try to get people out to a hospital within an hour, what we call a golden hour, when they're hurt or having heart attacks. And unfortunately, right now, waiting on an ambulance to come from Alpine eats up every bit of that hour," Wilson explained. "Having an ambulance in town is going to step that up a lot." Wilson's department consists of 6 volunteer firefighters. So far, 4 have expressed interest in receiving EMT training, he said. Being a volunteer department, the cost of EMT training had previously been prohibitive, he said. Emergent Air's sponsorship will make providing the essential service possible. The lack of an urgent care facility in Marathon makes the presence of an ambulance and EMTs even more important, said Wilson. It will make it possible for first responders to provide certain forms of medical care to patients right away, and Marathon's current dependence on Alpine's ambulance has stretched emergency services in the region thin. If an ambulance has to be dispatched to Marathon, for instance, that means it would be absent from Alpine if needed. It'll help out both communities, and it'll definitely help the people we serve, said Wilson. There's definitely a lot of progress being made as far as getting medical help here in town. As far as that goes, I think this is a step in the right direction.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, January 26, 2023. Update on Oasis Apartments Rehab by Sean Yorks. The Oasis Apartments, formerly Meadowbrook, will eventually receive a facelift. Jonathan Andrews of Thomason Development Group presented to the Fort Stockton City Council and said his development group, in conjunction with J.L. Gray Company, wants to develop and rehabilitate the Oasis Apartments on the northwest side of Fort Stockton. The developer approached City Council in February 22 with the same request, but the tax credit application was denied. Thomas Development wants to submit a 2023 tax credit application to the Texas Department of Housing, but will take a different approach. We did speak with the City Council last year regarding the property rehab, and we're submitting an application this round, Andrews told the council. We weren't selected last year, but we were submitting it through the USDA. The goals for the property have not changed since last year. Every individual apartment unit in the 56-unit complex will undergo a complete rehab. We are building a brand new community building that residents will be able to access and where we'll have services provided in the community building as well. We also will have a barbecue area and gathering area for the tenants. We're really excited about the project and starting to get to work on the rehab. New landscaping, sidewalks, and parking are also planned, as well as new flooring, ceiling fans, cabinets, counters, and energy-efficient fixtures and appliances, along with a new water heater, lighting, and vanity sinks inside each unit. Andrews asked for the city's support for the project because TDHCA has some scoring categories that awards points for local political support, as well as local governments providing contributions. What we're asking for is the support of the City Council for the rehab and also the waiver of the $250 permit fee. Both of those items will get us more points on the tax credit application and will make the application the most competitive that we can submit. We feel like this is a very strong application going into the 2023 round. The application was submitted last year under Region 12, but this year TDHCA has a special aside for USDA-financed property, rural development, and that's what the developer is applying for. Andrews said the property is in favorable position to receive the credit, including the fact that there has not yet been another application with the census tract within the last 30 years. That alone gives us a competitive advantage, along with the community and support from the Fort Stockton. He added that every single aspect of the property is going to be improved. The council approved Resolution 23-103, authorizing the developer to move forward and waiving the $250 fee. Fort Stockton Community Theater reminds theatergoers that Boomtown, a musical comedy performed by Texas Comedies, will have two performances on Saturday, January 8th at 7 p.m. and Sunday, January 29th at 2 p.m. The show is being sponsored by Vida Hodges and family to celebrate the late Delman Hodges' career in the oil industry. First National Bank is hosting a reception for the cast and audience following the performance on Saturday night. Tickets are $20 for adults and $15 for seniors and students. Tickets may be purchased online at fscommunitytheater.org with a credit card until noon on Saturday and until 10 a.m. on Sunday, but tickets will be available at the door for cash or check. Theater doors will open 30 minutes before the performance. Plan to attend an evening or an afternoon of musical fun with a touch of local color and a few local youth in the cast and crew. To reserve a specific seat or for more information, call Alice Dirksen at 336-3180. City hears update on EDC projects. Fort Stockton is steadily seeing growth and, as a result, an increase in sales tax. The Economic Development Executive Director, Remy Ramos, gave his annual report to the City Council and said the city has seen a $255,000 increase in sales tax from 2021 to 22 as the county shakes off the fog of the pandemic. 2019 saw the impulse buying, people hoarding stuff, going crazy with the pandemic. We continue to track it and monitor it, and we're starting to see a steady line. Ramos said there are still 25 commercial vacant lots that are ready for development that have utilities and 24 commercial vacant buildings that are either listed or available. The EDC has helped with 4 storefront improvements, 2 equipment loans, and 2 general renovations over the past 12 months, and is working with the Texas Department of Transportation to do an Interstate 10 corridor study to try to track and bring people in off the interstate and back onto business Interstate 10 through town. We're working with several different companies to bring new businesses to town, including the 300-megawatt substation that was added to the original plan for Lancium. I think we were all happy to see the Comanche Motel sale and demolition, so they definitely cleaned up that end of town. Ramos also noted the new Alsips, the reopening of the Gray Mule, and a new car rental business. Highway 285 developments, along with the new sewer line expansion. We have 2 or 3 people that were trying to get interested in some properties that will help with growth and hopefully attract some business into that area. EDC has spent more than $500,000 on community projects the past 2 years, including Gene Cummins Park with walking trails and Spray Park. In a total, we will end up spending more than $500,000 last year and currently approved, mostly at Gene Cummins Park. Ramos said, noting that $30,000 has been spent on the relocation of the bucking chutes at the Pecos County Convention Center, including roof repairs, air conditioner repairs, additional interior work, and 4 additional AC units. Bucking chutes and overall expansion of the rodeo in Fort Stockton will bring more visitors to the city. Ramos also noted that there's an official sales contract for the old Sears building, and a major chain retailer will be announced at that location in the next 30 to 45 days. Dollar General is going to expand to a second location on Highway 285. They see the availability of the markets that need to be reached, like in the Quail Run area, saying that EDC is working on locating 2 restaurant developments to Fort Stockton, as well as a new truck stop development. Ramos noted that some developments outside the city limits that will directly impact the city include the railroad working with a scrap iron transport company. We're seeing companies starting to express an interest in the railroad, and they're tired of waiting. They need to be in this area, so they're looking at the options of going from us to the San Angelo Junction and back out to El Paso. It's going to be their fastest option until the Presidio Onaga Bridge is open. Other businesses coming to or already building in the Fort Stockton area are data centers, solar farms, and a new spaceport operation center. Overall, such projects that directly impact the city bring $4.5 million to locally owned construction companies. City and county filed grant applications for police body armor. A grant program started by Texas Governor Greg Abbott in 2018 may one day save the life of a Fort Stockton police officer. We must do all we can to protect those who protect us, the governor said when he signed the Senate bill funding a $23 million grant program designed to provide rifle-resistant body armor to law enforcement. At its meeting, the Fort Stockton City Council approved Resolution 23-100R, authorizing the city to apply for the grant. The Cabacus County Commissioner's Court did the same, and the Sheriff's Department applied to receive 26 vests. Fort Stockton Police Chief Ernesto Velasquez said the deadline to apply is in February and the body armor is designed to resist high-caliber ammunition. The council then considered the resolution authorizing the city to apply for a grant of body-worn cameras from the governor's e-grants program. The cameras provide accountability for the officers and will record all contacts made in the line of duty. Velasquez was wearing one of the cameras and said this grant will help outfit all officers in the department with the cameras. The city approved interlocal service agreements with Pecos County for labor and equipment, firefighting services, and the Emergency Communications Network. Historically, the county has allowed the city to use equipment and vice versa. The city has allowed the county to use the equipment on a project such as streets. Before any bill is paid, we both have to agree on it. On the interlocal firefighting services agreement, the city has chipped in $80,000 for at least the past 7 years. The city's portion of the communications network agreement is $2,500. This is something that the city and county split on the cost. This is the Hyper Reach notification service that has assisted when we've had emergencies in the past. The system asks for citizens to sign up, and it's been a good notification tool for our citizens. The City Council approved two pay applications for work provided by LT Construction, a combined total of $99,000 for the addition of restrooms at the Fort Stockton Convention Center. Our city engineer went and assessed and identified that it is appropriate for these payout requests. County provides additional money to cover IGT payments. The Pecos County Commissioner's Court added an extra line item to the regular agenda, providing additional funding for Pecos County Memorial Hospital and declaring an emergency. The money will help the hospital pay the money it owes to the county. County Auditor Kay Hardwick received a spreadsheet from the hospital CFO detailing outstanding checks for 2022, mainly reimbursements to the county. The total comes to $512,000 plus. That's basically the payments for the IGT payments, Joe Schuster added. IGT, intergovernmental transfers, is a transfer of public funds between government entities to the state. In this case, the hospital owes that amount to the county. The county generally makes those payments to the state, and when the hospital receives money from insurance, the hospital reimburses the county. They've already been reimbursed. They've used the money for other bills. If we don't give them the money, they won't be able to pay us back. Schuster said it needs to be done as soon as possible because it has to come out of last year's funds, hence declaring the emergency to amend the budget. Commissioner Mickey Jack Perry moved to declare an emergency and amend the budget to provide the funds, and Robert Gonzalez seconded the motion. The commission appointed Matt Tarpley to fill the temporarily vacant Precinct 1 position on the hospital board and Kyle Carr to serve on the board through May. I think so long as we have 6 board members, that's what's in the bylaws, said hospital CEO Betsy Briscoe. Dear Editor, I read the obituaries daily in a large out-of-town newspaper. They're sad, but interesting. I've noticed no one ever goes to hell. Everybody goes to heaven. Jesus Christ spoke 3 times more about hell than heaven in the Bible. He stated that most people would not go to heaven. He said there are only 2 destinations in the hereafter. Also, I read about the deceased's earthly accomplishments. They read like a computer printout. Humanism? Sadly, most of the obits don't mention Jesus, the Savior of the world. What good are our earthly accomplishments if we miss heaven? Signed, George Pitts, Fort Stockton.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, January 19th. Lynn sent to prison after defaulting on probation. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. 143rd Judicial District Judge Mike Swanson ordered Barbara Salgado Lynn, age 55, of 506 South Dwight Street, to serve 3 years in prison on Tuesday, January 17th, after she failed to meet the requirements of her deferred adjudication. In March 2021, Swanson gave Lynn 6 years of deferred adjudication after she accepted a plea agreement and pled guilty to a charge of possession of a controlled substance, penalty group 1, greater than 1 gram, less than 4 grams, a third-degree felony. Deferred adjudication is a form of plea deal that enables a person to avoid a trial and possible conviction. The defendant can enter a plea of guilty or no contest to a charge in exchange for deferred adjudication, which means the judge doesn't find them guilty, but rather defers any finding of guilt in exchange for the acceptance of an alternative course of action. She was originally arrested on the possession charge on October 7, 2017, and was indicted for the offense by a 143rd District Grand Jury on January 2, 2019. According to the indictment, Lynn was arrested after being found to be in possession of a controlled substance, namely methamphetamine, in the amount of less than 1 gram. Lynn failed to show up for her first court appearance after her indictment in 2019 and was subsequently rearrested on January 7, 2021 for the same charge. Lynn was ordered to pay a fine of $1,500 as well as $355 in court costs and $180 in restitution to the DPS Restitution Accounting in Austin and given credit for 77 days of time served. Attorney for the state on the case was 143rd District Attorney Randall W. Reynolds. Napa wins bid for high school auto tech equipment. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. The school district's new auto tech shop should have tools and equipment on the way after this week's Monahans Wicket Pyote ISD School Board of Trustees meeting Monday evening. Auto tech teacher Scott Burkett wrote a grant application, which has been approved for the amount of $700,000, to purchase equipment for the new auto tech shop, which will be housed in a section of the Sudirth Elementary building. Some of the needed equipment listed in the grant application included Win Align package, radar tool, a 9,000-pound swing jack, wheel balancer, tire changer, and a bench lathe. A notice of bid request for automotive alignment, brake, and wheel servicing equipment was published in the news for 2 weeks in December. The school received one bid from the Monahans Napa store, which was accepted by the Board of Trustees. Monahans High School All-Region Band and Monahans High School All-State Choir members were recognized and presented to the board members during the meeting. All-Region Band members are Alexis Armendariz on flute, Candace Barrow, clarinet, Nathalie Rodriguez, clarinet, Gloria Vargas, bass clarinet, Holly Rasband, alto saxophone, Leah Pittman, baritone, Jaden Cota, percussion. Area round members, J.J. Castillo, baritone, James Garcia, tuba, Fisher Boone, percussion. Joe Barrow is the MHS band director. The All-State Choir member presented to the board members was Alexander Molinedo. Austin Billett is the MHS choir director. Also on the agenda was discussion and consideration of the financial auditors for the current fiscal year. Rocky Reeves of Smith & Reeves presented the financial audit report to the board. Quote, "The audit shows the category of unmodified opinion, which is good for the Monahans Wicket Pyote ISD. Everything is accounted for," Reeves said. The board gave approval to continue with Smith and Reeves as the district financial auditor. The MWP ISD Board of Trustees had their required training session before the regularly scheduled board meeting on Monday evening from 4 to 7 p.m. Quote, Larry Lee from Region 18 ESC provided the training for the district and a meal was provided for the evening, Superintendent Chad Smith said. The training is designed to help the Board of Trustees work together in more efficient ways for the betterment of the students and district policies, he said. All board members were present for the required training. The superintendent's report to the board included the updated district enrollment report and bond update. The district enrollment for December was 2,200. Quote, The bond projects are moving right along. We have a few things at Parkway Elementary that need to be tweaked, but it is functioning nicely. The front section of the high school, entrance, lobby, and offices are finished and in use. The press box elevator is scheduled to be finished next week, and the high school cafeteria target date is February 4th, Smith said. Financial reports presented by business manager Katie Jones show a tax balance of $1,061,000 needing to be collected. The Board of Trustees also approved the extension of Superintendent Chad Smith's contract for another 2 years through the 2024-2025 school year. The board moved to closed session to discuss the employment of Kimberly Bailey for a teaching position at Parkway Elementary. The board approved the hire after reconvening into public session of the meeting. All MWP ISD Board of Trustee members were present for the Monday evening meeting. Josh Schwab, Bobby Almanza, Donna Garcia, Steve Tuxhorn, Steve Fine, Nancy Upchurch, and Board President Raymond Reyes, as well as Superintendent Chad Smith. The next regularly scheduled meeting will be at 6:30 p.m. on February 20th in the boardroom of the Monahan's Wicket Pyote ISD Administration Building, located at 606 South Betty Street. Sales tax receipts highest in 3 years, but still down from December. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. January sales tax revenues for Monahans and most other Ward County communities is higher than January 2022, although some are lower than last month. Monahans received $388,000 compared to $293,000 last January, an increase of 32%. However, receipts last month were slightly higher with $406,000. City Manager Rex Thies said, quote, The January 2023 allocation is higher than last year, but down 4% from last month. The good news is sales tax is up from the previous year. This is the highest the January allocation has been since 2019. For the first 4 months of this fiscal year, allocations are up $331,000, 25% over last year, showing increased consumer activity locally, which is encouraging. MEDC's portion for January is $97,000. Receipts in the rest of the county were mixed. Grand Falls and Pyote posted strong gains, while Wicket and Thorntonville showed a decline in the money received in January of last year. The community receiving $23,000 compared to $8,800, an increase of 165%. Pyote was up 627%, with total receipts of $78,000 compared to $10,000 last January. Thorntonville and Wicket are both down from last January and more than December. Thorntonville received $4,600, 46% lower than last January's total of $8,500. December receipts were $4,400. Wicket received $19,000 in January compared to $27,700 last January, down by 29%. The January total was also higher than December's total. Irwin's 47 years of dispatching, bookkeeping, and cranes. The story was written by Jan Crenfill. Born in Colorado to Paul and Dolly Dutcher and moving to the Permian Basin at age 5 was the beginning of Robin Dutcher Irwin's life in West Texas. Irwin started elementary school in Midland, but was moved to an Odessa elementary school when her dad went to work for Mark's Trucking. Mark's Trucking became a crane company when Robin's dad convinced Mark to buy a crane, and the company became Mark's Crane Company. Paul Dutcher worked for Mark's Crane for several years, which allowed Robin to go to school in Odessa, where she attended Permian High School. Robin got married at 17 years old, 1 week into her senior year at Permian High School, and moved to Nebraska, where her new in-laws lived. Robin went to school and worked part-time at a Stuckey store and graduated from high school in 1973. Quote, Stuckey's was a popular convenience store chain throughout the Southeast, Southwest, and Midwestern states. They were known for their pecan log rolls and souvenirs, Irwin said. Irwin spent 9 months working for Stuckey's in Nebraska after school, on weekends, and holidays before coming back to Odessa at age 18. Quote, I hated Nebraska. It was too cold. I remember one blizzard in particular. People were stranded on the highways, trapped in their cars. The local guys would get on their tractors and go rescue the travelers. The Stuckey's where I worked would move the shelves, set up cots to shelter and feed the stranded travelers, Irwin said. 2 days after high school graduation, Robin hit the road and came back to Odessa. She didn't plan on sticking around Nebraska for another winter. Robin and her husband at the time worked a variety of short-term jobs to make a living until a Stuckey store manager contacted her and asked her if she would take a job as assistant manager of a Stuckey's in Sulphur Springs, Texas. So the couple moved to Sulphur Springs. They were in Sulphur Springs about 6 months. Then it was back to Odessa before going to El Paso for a short stay, and in 1974 they moved to Holbrook, Arizona, where Robin was manager of a Stuckey's. Quote, the jobs at Stuckey's would only last about 6 months, so we were on the move a lot. Stuckey's was open 24/7 and had trouble getting workers for the late shifts, weekends, and holidays. I didn't have family close by or children, so I could work when I wanted to or was needed, Robin said. Working for Stuckey's and constantly moving was beginning to lose its appeal, so Robin left Arizona and came back to Odessa, where she went to work for a health spa. Quote, the birth of Dutcher Phipps Crane and Rigging happened in 1973 while I was out in Arizona. They started with two cranes. Dad and Calvin were operating the cranes, and Mom was taking care of the office work, Robin said. Paul Dutcher had done his research on the best place to start a crane business, and according to all of his map study, Monahans was the center of the Permian Basin. Quote, Dad was right. The business took off and started growing. By the time I moved back to Odessa in 1975, Dad and Calvin were completely out of the office all day operating the cranes, and Mom was needing help in the office. She asked me if I wanted to help with the invoices, so when I finished my day working at the health spa, I would drive over here to Monahan's and spend the evening typing up invoices for Mom, Robin said. Driving back and forth from Odessa to Monahan's lasted about 2 years. Robin moved to Monahan's and went to work full-time for Dutcher Phipps in 1977, typing invoices, and eventually took over the accounts payable so her mom could have some free time. Quote, I kept pushing for more and more responsibility and took over the payroll, accounts receivable, accounts payable, and still did all the invoices. Dad finally turned over all the bookkeeping to me, and Mom got some more free time, Robin said. During this time, Robin had gotten a divorce, and not having any children, devoted all her time to working in the Dutcher Phipps office. Quote, "It became my life, but I still wanted more. I wanted to be a dispatcher," she said. The company had grown enough by this time to have several crane operators, and Paul Dutcher was covering the dispatching. But Robin would not give up on her goal of becoming the dispatcher and kept on wearing her dad down a little at a time. Dutcher finally told Robin that if she wanted to be a dispatcher, she needed to learn every single part on a crane, how it all worked, and how to operate the crane by herself. Dutcher was adamant about her learning the operation. Quote, "He told me if someone called in from the field and had to verbally describe a problem or needed a part, I had to know exactly what they were talking about, no guessing, or maybe this is what they were talking about. I would be expected to know for sure what was needed," she said. "I learned the names of every part, moving or unmoving, on a crane, and how to read the lift charts. Then Dad said I was going to learn to operate one," Robin said. "I spent lunch hours and evenings out in the yard practicing dropping that 12-inch steel ball into a 55-gallon barrel until I could drop it in and leave the barrel standing," Robin smiled. While Robin proved she had mastered the crane operation, her dad let her begin dispatching with him, watching over her shoulder. Quote, "This was all during a period of time when women didn't have jobs that dealt with equipment operations. Women were expected to be a secretary," Robin said. "I seriously had to prove I knew how to do the job. One old man, who was really hard-headed, would call in and refuse to tell me what he wanted or needed. He would ask for Dutcher and tell me he would wait until he could talk to Dutcher. One day he stopped by the office and would not tell me what he wanted, said he would wait for Dutcher. I'd had enough of being ignored and basically told him if he didn't want to talk to me, he could leave right then without any cranes and don't come back. He was completely taken aback, but decided pretty quickly to tell me what he needed. After that, he would only deal with me," Robin said. Robin spent almost all of her waking hours in some capacity working for Dutcher Phipps, but still managed to sneak in a private life and get married again. Quote, "I reconnected with Richard Irwin, who was someone I dated when I was a junior at Permian High School. We dated for a few years and got married in 1983, Robin said. Richard and Robin started their own construction business in 1981, R&R Construction Incorporated. Robin was working at both companies, dispatching for Dutcher during daytime and doing office work for R&R at night, until the surprise of her life happened when she became pregnant with their son. Robin and Richard had been told children were not in their future, but in 1992, son Bobby came into the world, proving all the medical voices wrong. Robin stepped back some from all the office work to have time with Bobby. She wanted to be a stay-at-home mom, but Dutcher said he needed her. Quote, "I told my dad I didn't want to miss anything involving Bobby, and Dad told me I wouldn't miss a thing. We would work it all out, and he did. I got to attend all sports and any other events Bobby participated in," Robin said. Robin Dutcher Irwin has spent 47 years working as office manager, dispatcher, and bookkeeper for Dutcher Phipps and R&R Construction Incorporated, with only a high school education and a whole lot of ambition to learn about every aspect of the businesses. Quote, "Dad retired in 93, and my brother-in-law, Billy Riley, came to work dispatching. Kenny and I took over the business with Calvin. Calvin was working in the office until 2000, when he retired too," Robin said. The Dutcher side bought out the Phipps side of the business in 2018, making it a one-family business. Shortly after the buyout, key employees received shares of stock so they would be co-owners of the business. Quote, "It was always important to Dad for employees to be totally involved in the business, and he would want them to have ownership, so that's what he did," Robin said. Robin is partially retired. She works 3 days a week now, which gives her time for her volunteer work. Robin is involved in the Women's Division of the Chamber of Commerce, serves on the Monahan's Mural Committee, helps with garden club projects, and devotes time to her pet project, Bluebonnet Corner, at Main and Sealy. Quote, "I have absolutely no regrets about my years of Dutcher Phipps work schedules because my jobs brought me so close to my dad and gave us a relationship we would not have had otherwise because he was always working," Robin Dutcher Irwin said. Lassiter indicted on 2 felony charges. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. The Ward County Grand Jury handed down 2 indictments on June 3rd for Lamont Kevin Lassiter, age 33, of 300 East 4th Street, on charges of credit debit card abuse, a state jail felony, and harassment of public servant, a third-degree felony. The indictments state that on or about March 7, 2021, Lassiter did then and there, with intent to fraudulently obtain a benefit, a debit card, with knowledge that the card had not been issued to the defendant, and with knowledge that the card was not used with the effective consent of the cardholder, James Daniel Girard. The second indictment states on or about March 22, 2021, Lassiter did, with intent to assault, harass correctional officer in the Ward County Jail, Pedro Natividad Dominguez, intentionally spit at Dominguez while he was conducting his regular duties at the jail. Bond was set at $20,000 for both charges, and Lassiter remains in custody in lieu of posting the bond.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.